Hey, Case. Test level. There we go. Good. Okay. Steve Asmussen, 920. Stream good? A very good post-Travers weekend Monday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online. And at our websites, thebic.com, and kind of an interesting 3 days. The New York Breds had to pay the price, I'm afraid, for Saturday. Saturday, about as perfect a day as I think a lot of us have ever enjoyed at Saratoga Racecourse. It's hard not to put it into pretty elite company of fabulous Travers days, right? You can feel free to weigh in. Friday was, you know what? Friday was worse than could have been anticipated, and then Saturday ended up being, better and idyllic beyond expectation. So the off the turf and all the carved up kind of field situation and, you know, sealed and all that on Friday. Not that there weren't results that made perfect sense. There wasn't a question of that, but yeah, it's not what you're hoping for, obviously. Especially, you know, listen, as big as Travers Day is with all the, you know, the four grade one stakes and the two other nice stakes, you know, if you're campaigning New York Breds, you wanted Friday to be your Travers Day, in essence. We'll touch. I think Kelly Breen, in fact, is going to join us. I think Kelly deserving with Andiamo a Firenze. This is the Ron Lombardi sibling to Firenze Fire, and he's clearly going to be a very nice horse going forward. So I reached out to Kelly. Steve Asmussen, though, is the front and center first set guest at about 9:20 in wake of Epicenter's career-defining performance to this point. He's going to have a very big chance, it would seem. Correct? It would seem that in 70 days or whatever it is, 60-something days, he's going to have a chance, and a level of effort like we saw from him, winning the Travers, gaining that grade one classic category victory. He simultaneously not only, I don't want to say cemented, because I saw that last night the people were, they were very eager to debate how much of competition remains for three-year-old champion, and obviously there's plenty of racetrack left on that front, but one thing that we were doing leading into Saturday in discussing the three-year-olds was positioning the race as, you know, a division-shaping tilt. I considered several different words there. before coming up and settling on Tilt. I think you probably heard the gears grinding. I don't think what we expected, and one of the reasons I'm saying that the weekend and Saturday in particular, and frankly the four races that we were so anticipating, the all grade one pick four, that we would get, you know, not just nice confrontations and, you know, bettable whatever. It went way beyond that, and that's what was so sort of surprising. I mean, yeah, there were a couple of races after the Travers to help the crowd file out, but that effort. And we'll let Steve Asmussen put it in perspective. We'll also hear from Johnny D and from Rich Migliori. Let them weigh in. Andy tomorrow. I want to get Grenigan too. The dominant result here, because make no mistake, I mean, this was a dominant effort. And I mean, yeah, I think we all knew that the most likely winners were Epicenter and Cyberknife. And Cyberknife, by the way, before we get too far afield, for Cyberknife to hold second, it was unbelievable. Because when you, a quick aside, I said this to Ron Winchell, if you didn't see yesterday's Loose on the Lead, had a really fun visit with Sean Clancy, too, but with Ron Winchell. And he said this to him, that the way in which that pace, and I know people, you know, are going to look at the pace and they say, well, it was a typical mile and a quarter pace, 23 and 1, 47 and 3, 111 and 2, 135 and 3. And then stopping the clock in 2 minutes and 3/5, 0.72. However, there's a different set of evidence in the chart to what those splits say. You know, the splits say, okay, those are honest splits for a mile and a quarter. And Mig will be invaluable on this. The chart tells a very distinct story. Because Cyberknife taking the lead, and you, Florent Giroux, give him every credit. And it's funny, as the day was unfolding, and as there was a discussion in the grandstand, and, you know, talking about the race, and how you think it's going to turn out, and who's going to take the lead, as we were, you know, doing that kind of thing, more and more people were kind of saying, you know, and I spent some time with Al, as it happens, with Al Gold, and it was increasingly evident that there was a case to be made that, you know, Cyberknife, who, you know, was going to establish position no matter what, but I absolutely was unsurprised when Giroux took control, and he did the right thing. Because nobody else was going. That became pretty evident. Ain't Life Grand had the speed that we sort of anticipated because of the sharp workout. And Early Voting, who was a candidate to go to the front, and maybe, I don't know if that would have, how much that would have changed the result. But folks, when you see a chart like this, where the horses that were, in this case, second and third at the first and second call, and even at the three-quarter mark, they finished 7th and 8th. And easy, Early Voting was eased. And Ain't Life Grand was beaten, what, 2, 6, 11, 12 lengths, 13 lengths. When you see horses attending paces and ending at the bottom of the chart, that tells you a lot about the speed of the race, the speed of the racetrack, and what was going on out there. So Epicenter, who has been literally rebuilt, you know, this is like one of those cross cuts. It's like the cannonball run of 3-year-old seasons. They literally repairing the car on the cross country journey to keep going. Death Race 3000 or whatever. I mean, this was really, and I can't wait for Steve Asmussen to address it. I mean, we've talked about it already a little bit, and I've repeated a dozen times already the comment from Scott Blasey after the Jim Dandy, when he sent Epicenter across the street out of the winner's circle and came back to me and had literally the cat that ate the canary grin, and said, dealing with a different horse now. And he really is. They really have remade him. And all the conversation we had in the spring about taking his speed away, well, now he is a tactical weapon of scary proportion. A 112 buyer here. And so to fold back into Cyberknife's heroic effort to be second, to hold second. And, you know, the other part, of course, of the chart that speaks to the pace, the fact that Zandon and Rich Strike, who were deep closing, you know, Derby impact runners, they got up to contend with Cyberknife for the exotic slots. So this wasn't a collapse to the extent we saw in the Derby, obviously, but it was a serious pace on what was obviously a slowish track. A 112 buyer here, and we'll see about what Jerry Brown does with the Thoroughgraph. But this is a level of performance, and Joel Rosario with obviously a fabulous day, winning the Sword Dancer, 40 minutes before, and in Rosario's hands, this horse is, it's a serious Breeders' Cup Classic win candidate. Not contender, win candidate. Because we have been operating under the assumption that the three-year-olds would have to raise their game to compete. Well, they did. This one did. And it's going to, you know, I think it came home to roost pretty clearly. He is who we thought he was going back to Derby and Preakness. And, you know, as Ron Winchell said, you know, the Derby, you shrug and you just say, well, it's the Derby, and things boiled over, and, you know. And then the Preakness is the disappointment, obviously. So, here we are, 90 days later, and Epicenter is the very clear three-year-old division leader, and then some. Cyberknife will regroup. I could tell when I saw Brad Cox come into the winner's circle after the Travers. I said, ran great. He said he did. He ran great. And you could see Brad was not. I mean, there's always disappointment, but you all you can do is lead them over and hope that they acquit themselves as well as you anticipated, and as well as you hope you've prepared them. And obviously he did, and that was actually the case throughout the day, because even earlier, and Steve Asmussen, this was one of those days where, you know, the team Asmussen got to the Travers, and anything other than a win was going to make it a very frustrating and disappointing day, because of course Clairiere was rocking around in the gate and by all rights, she should have been backed out and given a chance to reset. The latch sprang, and I was watching with Johnny and Will, I think, and she was rocking back. She went forward, she went back, and when she went back the second time, the latch sprung, and that race was over for her, as the bell rung. And it's only her, considerable class that even dragged her into the race at all, really. But that was obviously a disappointment. And Jackie's Warrior got beat. And Jackie's Warrior got beat on the square. And I saw some incredibly stupid things, in the immediate aftermath. He'll be retired any minute. Oh, my God. What is wrong with you people? It's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, you got to be as jaundiced and as sour a person and somebody involved in the game with that kind of comment. I mean, this is why you put them in the gate. And this is why, 1-to-5s and 2-to-5s, and this is why we, try to figure out a way, is this one vulnerable? In the aftermath of Jackie's Warrior getting beat, seventh furlong is different. So, profess to like the game and enjoy the game, but that's your reaction to, and of course, the Cody's Wish story. That's why this is the greatest sport there is, and why this is the greatest unscripted drama there is. I mean, here's a horse named in a Make-A-Wish Foundation fairy tale. It's incredible. Malathat kind of rights the ship, winning the personal ensign. Jack Christopher gets exactly the prize that was sort of, preordained, wasn't it? It really was, and it actually did okay with that spot. But we'll talk about that from the betting when we start doing some betting reviews. But Jack Christopher, as good as anticipated. He'd already very established with his record coming in, and coming out of the Haskell, the turn back, and there were plenty of turnbacks, but he was the one that completely, totally came through. There were a couple in there that I was shocked that Actuator didn't impact this better. And I suppose, Gunite, this race, of course, came before Clairiere, but, Gunite just is a hard trier, period. And excellent effort for him as the third choice. Beaten, a length and a quarter on the chart. Very good effort. And the one of the little tidbits, little nuggets that came out of the day from a handicapping and playing standpoint, and I specifically included Runnin' Son of a Gun in the write-up. Sometimes you'll throw in a fourth horse and just, it's sort of a wing and a prayer. But I wanted to make the point, as I wrote it up, that Runnin' Son of a Gun was a horse in this race that was well within striking range of the exotic candidates. And at 41-1, congratulations to John Toscano and the Scott Zimmerman connections on a terrific performance to be third in here. Unbelievable. Coming out of the effort at 56-1 in the Amsterdam. And it's so funny. I mean, he's a gelding, so he's just going to be fun for you know, for the connections to, you know, race at whatever level he sustains. But I'm thrilled for Team Toscano. We should really get John on. I haven't seen John this summer at all. So we'll have to reach for John Toscano. This is really nice. Claimed him for $40,000, and all he's done is hit the board in four straight stakes, including a grade one. In a grade one, a grade two, and a grade three. Unbelievable. So congratulations to Team Toscano. Connor Herr ran a nice race. I could tell that Mike Tomlinson and Vicky and Mark Farrar and the team, the Patricia Hope team, and I could tell they were disappointed. But they absolutely belonged, and he ran hard. He was your leader, and Jack Christopher, he stayed with Jack Christopher for as much as he could, as long as he could. So and then there's Gaffeau. We'll get to Chris Clement. Gaffeau reprises his sword dancer victory. Unbelievable. And you know what's funny? And I'm sure quite a few players will smile at this. You know how when a horse gets beat, certain horses get beat. And in fact, in this race here, we'll do a countermeasure. Mira Mission runs terrific and gets beat. And the rest of the day, all I did was run into people that kept saying, "Oh, I needed Mira Mission." Sean Clancy and me and Johnny and Will, we all needed Mira Mission. The converse is nobody. It seemed like nobody had Gaffeau. It's the craziest thing. We all needed Mira Mission, and nobody had Gaffeau. The rest of the day, that's all I heard. God, Gaffeau, Jesus, Gaffeau knocked me out. I needed Mira Mission. It's very funny. You know, but in the meantime, what was his price? Hold on. Let me go pull out the, where's the chart? he was 9-2. So obviously, plenty of people. Who are these people? Plenty of people, obviously, had them. So, kind of funny. It was a common theme throughout the afternoon. Nobody had Gaffeau, despite him being third choice. And everybody had Mira Mission, despite him being 18-1. So, all right, Case. I've got, yeah, that you, that one, the 817. All right, we're going to get Steve Asmussen in here. Yesterday, let me slip in the ballerina result, and good night, Olive. Made a lot of sense, I thought. 5-1. That was a nice price. And the Philly and Mare Sprint Division getting a little, it's finding purchase, as we say. So, the other grade one on the weekend, Rod Ortiz aboard, and Witt, who, as Todd Pletcher told you on Wednesday or Tuesday, finding a home on the grass, wins that Better Talk Now. What else are we missing? Well, the Boston spot, I mean, that was no surprise, obviously, technical analysis, and obviously Cody's Wish. So there's the top line on the stake action for Saratoga, but there's plenty more. There was Friday night at Oaklawn, and in fact, there's a horse we'll bring up with Steve Asmussen there, Society. How about Society? A big effort. Another gun runner. It's everywhere. Society, 100 buyer winning the Chucktown Oaks, Tyler Gaffleone, art collector also. But you know, I'm just thinking, there was a lot of attempts at repeat winners. They were all over the board. That included art collector and CC, who really seemed kind of flat. So she unable to repeat. But Gaffoe repeats. We should mention Letruska, Casey. Yeah, he might be on the phone. If it did that case, he's on the phone. That's my guess. All right, give him a minute. All right, yeah, I got plenty to do, and I really didn't firm up a second guest for this hour. Rich Migliori, top of the hour. Kelly Breen later, as mentioned. Christoph, I think an hour two as well. Johnny D. Had a very productive, he and Will, and Will's son Drew, had a very productive weekend. There was a lot of golf, there was a lot of eating, and there was a lot of horse race action. So we'll get Johnny's post-Travers weekend, one of his favorite sort of quasi, it's a quasi vacation. 40, you come up here, come on, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Saw a lot of people. I should slip that in too, really. What a festive atmosphere. There are times when you get a big day like this and things are a little flat, you know, they don't necessarily have buzz and you know, that energy that you're looking for, that really enhances the entire on-track big day experience. Well, you don't have to worry about that on Saturday, because the place was alive, very much so. So on that front, you had virtually every strata of racetrack fan and attendee type, from grizzled veteran to backyard aficionados to, you know, kind of younger and kind of wide-eyed and, you know, taking it all in, what we've affectionately referred to a few times as the, you know, the bourbon swilling, cigar toting, Lily Pulitzer wearing set. Yeah, they were in full flora. Casey, Steve said, try him again now. Okay, I think he was on. I had a feeling he was on the phone. All right, so no, it was fabulous. It was just a fabulous day. I spent a little bit of time everywhere. I was did a little paddock to track apron. So sat with Johnny and Will and Drew for a good period. I'm told you I spent a race with Al Gold, and it just was great. Walked around. I walked to the backside. I parked at the barn because I knew I got there for the third, and I knew that, you know, the wasn't going to contend with the, you know, the front side lot there. So I parked by the barn, went to see the filly. The filly was funny. The filly standing in the middle of the stall, didn't want to come to the webbing because the fan was hitting her just right. She said, "No, I'm very happy here. I'm not coming to the webbing." So I walked back and forth twice, and the backyard was alive. Steve Asmussen is joining us, and had the nicest discussion yesterday on Loose on the Lead with Ron Winchell. For Steve and for Ron and the entire Winchell Thoroughbred team, a first Travers victory. And Steve, congratulations. Just a tremendous performance.
Thank you very much. A great victory, as you mentioned, for the whole team. You know, Ron and David and Winch Thoroughbreds, the whole barn. You know, Scott, everybody. Can't believe how excited and happy the Travers victory for Epicenter made everybody.
And, you know, you always want to win races like this, and they're all, you know, established targets. We talk so often about the Triple Crown season and the lead-up and those three races, but there's certain stations on the calendar that they're fixtures. And when you got a horse like this, Steve, that's got, you know, it's going to be a stallion, these are rare opportunities. You had certain things that you wanted to do with him in preparation, and it just feels like everything post-Preakness was perfect.
What? Ideal. It's just been ideal. It's quite obvious how strong and important Saratoga is now to American horse racing. And just, you know, 49,000 people, 55 million in handle, you know, just unbelievable. Like 11 million in handle on the Travers alone, you know, best three-year-olds in the country in training in the race. And for him to win in such emphatic, it's amazing feeling. Absolutely. You know, we knew that it would be great to win it, but it actually felt better than expected.
Well, we'll get to maybe some contributing factors on that front in a second. Talk about, Steve, the changes, and we've touched on it a couple of times since the spring and since New Orleans, because, you know, here was a horse that was basically, you know, utilizing his speed, and he's been really kind of refashioned, and whether it's partially maturity and partial, you know, training, precise training nuance, explain the process of turning him into much more of a tactical weapon.
I believe 100% of it is his understanding and confidence of what it's all for. What it's all for, meaning where to be in front. And the difference that I think that he has shown in the Jim Dandy and in the Travers is how comfortable he was with where he was in the race. I think that we were further back than expected behind a moderate pace in the Jim Dandy, and I think it was, you know, because I read on Townieport broke good and went straight to the fence, and Joel, having so much confidence in him, he just eased him out of what could have been a troubled spot, and it put him a little further behind than we were expected. But the horse didn't get anxious after he did that. He stayed loose on the lead, on his rein, and accelerated when Joel asked him to, but was confident not to think he was in a hurry, and the horse being in a hurry. And then in the Travers, I thought it was just an ideal trip for him. He was away cleanly, letting go away from the gates the first 7-8 strides on a loose rein. You could see Joel was comfortable with how much pace was in front of him, but he attended it the pace as easy as he wanted. You know, approaching the quarter pole, Cyberknife separated a bit from the field and obviously had some race, but the confidence that Epicenter had to move up to him easily, but not seeming like he was all out. I think that's the change. You know, and he went to the wire very comfortably, you know, just a beautiful race.
What was particularly stunning is you know, he again blitzes to, you know, to reach contention, and Cyberknife stayed with him as long as he could, but then watching Joel, who, you know, almost never asks a horse with anything more than his hands and with his body, you know, doesn't you know, reach behind him and doesn't you know, employ the stick.
I thought, accelerated. You know, watching the race and watching the replay multiple times, I thought that he gathered him up and he rode him, and he extended Epicenter from the quarter pole, you know, from the quarter pole past the eight pole, and I love how he dropped his head and he extended to the wire. And then once he did get away from Cyberknife, he separated. Joel led up on him from a pressure standpoint, but I thought Epicenter's action continued through the wire very fluidly. You know, like he willing to go forward, really where the wire is. You know, without a lot of pressure on him the last 16th, but he didn't decelerate. He looked very smooth and beautiful. Just like the rhythm you would like of a work. And to finish up in a time of 2:73 at Saratoga, I mean, that's racehorse time, comparative to anybody any day. And, I mean, what a great feeling it is to have Epicenter be capable of that, look that comfortable winning a race, and then his attitude when he came back. Very proud of himself, like he understands this, and huge things ahead for us.
Well, we'll get to that side of it. For those that haven't seen the splits by quarter, 23-3, 24-1, 23-3, 24-flat, 24-4. And that shows tactical speed. Steve, what do they say? Every horse has got one move in them. A good horse will have two. An exceptional horse, you can ask as many as three times. And it just feels like, that's where he is, exceptional. And for the figure to come back like it did, I think that we all expected that we were going to have a clear 3-year-old division leader after Saturday, but to realize that we've got a 3-year-old that can contend in the classic with the handicap horses, that I think has surprised people.
Well, Epicenter all year's numbers have been exceptional. He's always been a fast horse. He's laid down some very good time, but going back off the Travers, looking back at all of his races and watching him, I do believe that he is moving easier right now in his races. Just a lot more
interesting,
relaxed, deeper breath, covering more ground per stride. Just a very good rhythm right now.
Unbelievable. You talked about what a great feeling it was. Let's get the elephant out of the room. It had been something of a frustrating day for the team before 5:51.
Absolutely. It definitely was.
Let's back up. And again, sometimes in the aftermath of a race, and until you really realize how big everybody ran, people didn't really realize, I think, how great Jackie's Warrior actually ran from a fig standpoint, his second best effort of his career. He also got challenged early, Steve, and he was going 7 furlongs. That contributes. I mean, talk about what your thought is 48 hours later.
I think the only thing that beat him is how fast Cody's Wish came home. He was very comfortable watching the replay. I don't think that he was challenged early. He's Jackie. He's very comfortable. They come home. He comes home in under 36 the last 3/8. So what's that put Cody's Wish from where he was? A 7/8 dirt race at Saratoga, coming home the last 3/8 and probably 35-1. That'll win most any
Not
race
even.
In the world. It just
35, Steve.
Unbelievable. Cody's Wish came home as fast as a racehorse can come home, and he gets all the credit for winning. And how surprised should we honestly be that a curling out of dance card is capable of running as fast as any horse ever?
No, it's very fair, and it doesn't change the game plan at all. And in fact, I talked to Scott Blasi yesterday, and he said we'll be ready for the sprint.
Oh, absolutely. I really think that Jackie needed this get to run. His 4 wins this year were probably too easy. We got plenty of time. He'll be sharp. He'll be fresh. He'll be ready to show him who he is. He's a very proud horse. Came out of it great. And we couldn't be more excited to have a chance to run him in the Breeders' Cup Sprint.
Let's talk about what was really a misfortune and a potentially avoidable scenario. Clairiere, we were watching, Steve, and she was rocking in the gate. She went forward, she came back, she went forward, she came back, and the gate opened, and the race was over.
Right. She did sustain a pretty substantial cut on her tongue. It's healing up extremely quickly. I don't think we're going to miss any training with her, and we will, obviously discuss with Barbary and John and if we run her again before the distaff. But I'm much happier that happened there than in the Breeders' Cup distaff, and that will be corrected.
Well, fair point. It seemed that if they take a second and let her settle, or maybe back her out and back her back
well,
in.
I think the responsibility at the gates is all ours. It's our responsibility how they act in the gate, how they act pre-race, and we need to correct that.
What explain, Steve? Explain to people what you know. What you can do exactly to get her more comfortable. I mean, just standing her and
paying
in
attention
and out
to her. Paying attention to her. Never been an issue previously. Surprised it was an issue. We are very focused on gait work all the time with all of our horses at all stages, and I am very proud that that rarely happens to us. But it is. But it definitely did. And we beat ourselves by how we acted. And so we need to correct that.
Very fair. Well, let's round out the stakes conversation at Saratoga with Gunite, who just is dead game and tries so hard. And you have to be delighted with his effort.
The Rodney Dangerfield of our barn. I mean, he just, you look at 10 races, 9 in the money, 600 and something thousand, grade 1 winner, and he's the fourth horse they ask you about on a day you run races. You know, he's just, 11 to 1 winner of the hopeful, man, can't catch a break. But he is a fun of a racehorse to train and to be around and to run as you could possibly have. One of the really fun parts about him is we've had so much of his family, first dam, second dam, third dam, run so many of the siblings and stuff like that. And they're just racehorses. They are. You know, he could, novice could gallop him, he doesn't care who you breeze him with. You work him by himself, he'd loaf around there and have trouble making time if they didn't ask him to pick it up. And you can work him with Jackie's Warrior and he'll cool out like that was nobody. He is a very confident, proud horse, bright-eyed, beautiful personality, unbelievably sound, and he would be a fun horse to get to run for a long time.
Well, there's no reason he's got
right,
the chance to become
always
the Tony type.
You know, Gunrunner and what Gunrunner's doing and just phenomenal, and he is a grade one winning son of Gunrunner. He will get his chance to be a daddy at some point. But right now, the barn's having a lot of fun running him.
Well, and he's another horse, and this was, Steve, a formula for a good part of the day. He gets a 102 buyer, a career best on Saturday in the Jerk.
His Amsterdam was a very strong race, and then he backs.
Yep.
The Amsterdam was his fastest race to date, best fig numbers. He comes out of that, wheels back, doesn't blink an eye, and adds to it. I mean, we're there. I mean, we're right there. He's willing to run against anybody that's out there, and he's going to run competitively.
Are you going to do the Gallant Bob with him?
I probably will choose the race at Churchill. You know, the purses at Churchill are just so lucrative.
Okay.
He's run well at Churchill. You know, the Gallant Bob, he will be nominated, but we will weigh our options. But it was funny. Everybody, he stands in the stall next to Epicenter, and he was the greeter all morning Sunday. He's had his head out, proud of him, thought he deserved a little love too, and I thought, I agree with
him. I love it. Well, you mentioned the family. You know, he's out of a cowboy cow mare. A simple surprise.
Yep.
This is one of the homebreds.
Yep.
Yeah.
There are a lot of homebreds and wind pitchers in his pedigree. A whole bunch of them.
I love it. We talked yesterday. We had Ron on TV, and we talked about the balance between the homebred program and keeps 25 or so mares, and then the purchases like an Epicenter, and the incredible font that will continue the Tappet, all the Tappet mares being covered by Gunrunner, and Ron yesterday, Steve, and this is no news to you or surprise. I mean, he really credits the continuity of the team. And you mentioned David Fisk, and he talked about the developing
Dr.
the horses.
Dr. Lambert.
Yep.
The consistency of it. And what a wonderful feeling to be a part of something that is having this level of success. By having a plan and sticking to it, unwavering. And this has been since Kubi. I mean, back in the day. I mean, we've just, and the tweaking, the modifying, just aiming at it. And to be in a position to have Gunrunner and those Tappet mares and how that cross is working, it's extremely exciting. And I can't not, with the Gunrunner Tappet cross, not say something about Society in our Charlestown Oaks.
I was going to bring her up.
I was so impressed with her race. And, you know, Charlestown, use her a little bit away from the gate, get you some positions, solid fraction. And the way she went to the wire and galloped out, I'm like, are these Gunrunners machines or what? And another Gunrunner out of a Tappet mare just gets her 100 buyer at Charlestown and runs a great race.
Big time, and the Charlestown Oaks has been, you know, pretty good harbinger too. It's a, you know, because it's a two-turn, you know, bull ring 7/8. It shows, you know, a lot of capability.
Right, exactly. And when she runs the time, you know, comparable better than Frank's Rockette, you know, a older mare as accomplished as her. I mean, she's serious. I mean, I was so impressed with her race.
This is Peter Blum who's got his hands on a Tappet mare, and so it's utilizing the template, but for another one of the clients.
What a beautiful pipeline.
You made me, now I'm gonna lose my train of thought where I wanted to go with that. Ron talked about, obviously, you know, he was with his father when they picked Tappet out, and actually, of course, his dad died fairly soon thereafter. I mean, while Tappet was moving toward training, and QV, I believe, is the first. I mean, Tappet won the Wood in Ron's name, obviously, but or Winchell Thoroughbred's name. QV is the first stake winner.
Grade one, right, when he won Paterity, when he went at Belmont. It was our first
there you
grade
go.
One winner with Ron, yes. The same.
Explain, when did you and when did Ron reach out to you to start training horses for him?
All my communication back then was through David and my dad, and who, you know, in the farm, and they were always down there. And, you know, me and Ron were part of the process, but we were at the, you know, we were at Thanksgiving children's table and listening to Vern, his dad, and my dad, talk business, you know. But we were obviously paying attention, and I know that, you know, that our dads are proud of us for, you know, following their lead, you know, and just honest evaluation of horses, tremendous amount of respect for horse flesh and trying to put them in the right spots and move forward. You know, I just cannot say enough about, you know, Ron and David's attitude about giving horses chances. And they're, it's at that level, they are willing to run horses to get them better, not worried about getting beat. And just understand the process and the end goal and, you know, giving the horses a chance to compete and to improve.
I love it. I'm glad I got that in. Got to also fill in a few blanks around the country. And, you know, I said to Blasi maybe a week ago, I have not seen Clark Brewster all meet. I know he came early on, but you took care of things for Clark back at Remington over the weekend. I think Friday night, Smiles Galore, another Gunrunner, breaks the maiden.
David was teasing me on Saturday. We had three Gunrunner winners the day before, and they didn't own any of them. With Bella Runner for Three Chimneys at Ellis, and Smiles Galore at Remington, and Society winning the Charlestown Oaks. So, if you guys have a fan club for Gunrunner, would you need to sign me up as number one? Okay.
Yeah, you're well, and then there's going to be Epicenter, you know, the Epicenter fan club down the road too. This was a big improvement from this horse, this colt.
With Epicenter,
Philly.
Well, no, oh, Philly. Philly.
Smiles Galore. Yeah, I got in too big of a hurry with her last year. I got in too big of a hurry. She was a very generous trainer, and I went right on by fast and strong, and I got to light and weak, and gave her a break at Clark's Farm, do a wonderful job out there, came back in, gave her a two-turn turf race just so she'd be a little lost without much pressure, and then slowed down because she wants to overwork a little bit. And then I thought Stewart gave her the right trip on the right day. And I expect her to move. Her maiden win, she actually ran faster than the allowance race did that night. But I will slowly step her out for 7/8 and not do my best not to make the same mistake I did with her last year.
Tell me about Bella Runner. You mentioned the Ellis Gun Runner winner. This is a beautifully bred filly out of the wonderful Love and Pride that was a big-time grade one mare. Bella Runner breaks her maiden for Three Chimneys.
Yeah, nice filly. Beautiful. Needed time to fill into her frame and stuff. At Oaklawn this year, she got an entrapped epiglottis. Dr. McCoy did the entrapment for us and took our time with her coming back. But she had been working excellent leading up to this race, and I really liked the style in which she won it. You know, she was in good position. They let one through on the fence, which kind of caused the race to pick up a little bit before you wanted it to from her position. And then she still had enough to hold on late. So, I mean, I think that that's a race that will get her to two turns off of that. You know, she kind of came out of the dog leg there at Ellis, get her to two turns from there. And I do believe that that's a filly that'll get some black tight before she goes to the breach.
Well, and you know, being out of that mare, AP Indy mare, Love and Pride, I think Todd trained her.
And a beautiful physical filly. Stands up over a lot of ground, covers a lot of ground. I mean, she will definitely have her place in a broodmare band in the future.
Tell me about Peter Bradley's winner, the practical joke filly, Jokes on Blue, who won at First Asking.
A wonderful surprise. I mean, Philly is a little bit of a timid actor. Very, you know, then she draws two, and then full field, they scratch the one. You know, horses scratch in off the eligible. I'm like, man, this is not a great scenario for her. But Vincent Chaminade wrote a very good race on a first-time starter filly that can be hesitant. She can be. She notices things and stuff. I thought he wrote quarter pole when he pushed her through a nice spot. You know, she opened up, looked like she kind of hesitated a little bit in the open air, and then she saw the target and ran to it beautifully. You know, a pleasant surprise by a nice filly that, for every reason in the world, should move forward.
Well, that is interesting, and now I'm sorry somehow that we weren't together, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, so you could have put this on the list. She paid, well, you probably would have kind of downplayed her.
I wanted her to split the field. I just thought she really needed the race to give her a little more direction. I didn't want to accelerate her works in the morning to, you know, shake her up, because I thought we were very close. She put in the miles. She'd done the work, but she seemed a bit hesitant. I didn't want to overdo it in the morning to where I got her to where she wasn't loving that. And then I was wanting her to split the field, back off, take a little time, come again, and she jumps up and wins. It just, every once in a while, it's good to take a shot.
Well, and she won a 20-1, folks. So this one, we're not getting 20-1 again. Jokes on Blue. I'm sure Peter is thrilled. And I can't have this conversation. We haven't spoken since Echo Again debut. 10 days ago now or so. Obviously, this was the worst kept secret in racing. How has she done? How have things gone for him since?
You're talking Winchell Homebreds, right? You're talking Winchell Homebreds. You're talking Gunrunner. You're talking the success of Echo Zulu last year. I think his name gave it away on what we thought of him, right? I
mean, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, there's no Echoes and no Agains in his names and his pedigree, but it was kind of funny. We, you know, lovely, unbelievable physical, always a standout. You know, had him at Churchill for a while, come up to Saratoga, taken our time with him, this, that, and the other. And I do believe he is the first horse I've ever worked out of the gates at Saratoga. And Todd Pletcher asked me who that horse is by. So, I mean, he's a standout.
Well, there's also a story going around about Bill Mott's interest in him as well.
Yeah, Bill Mott's helping us train him. We need and we want it. We want the help, man. We need the magic.
I heard he ponied.
Yeah, he out there on him the other morning and stuff like that. Yep. That South Dakota connection comes in really handy sometimes. Yeah. Logan, South Dakota was teaming up on him the other morning.
That is too funny. I'm going to let Sean Clancy is going to write about it this week. He said that Bill Mott made a very bold prediction after ponying Echo again. I'm not going to steal the thunder, Steve. We've come to that point of the visit.
We will go as far as spilling the beans on his exercise rider went and bought Mr. Modica, offered to buy Mr. Modica the coffee. I promise you that.
I love it. Steve, you peppered the entry box for Kentucky Downs. I see that you got seven in, including a couple of maidens. Let's look ahead to this week. Everybody appreciates, believe me, they all tell me that they love when the Steve Asmussen Lock of the Week comes up.
My strength on this is... Fairchild is my best chance on opening day at Kentucky Downs. I'm disappointed in my big horse, you know, the owners, why don't I get in on the eligible with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. My one win at Kentucky Downs as an owner with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and he's on the AE for opening day. But
that's funny.
I absolutely love Kentucky Downs. You know, Darren Fleming goes there for us, so Eric, the youngest, is going to go for the Kentucky Downs meet and help out there. And
nice.
You know, we're just so excited about the Kentucky Downs adding another day. And entering for the second day this morning, got several in the entries there. I think a couple of very good chances if we can get in. Kentucky Downs, that kind of money, getting excluded is your worry, you know? You want in, yeah. You want to run, and it's a great time.
Well, for those that are listening, Fairchild, who's going to be in the third race on opening day on Thursday, this happens to be a Spitestown filly that's a four-year-old trying to step forward out of Rachel Alexandra's sister, Samantha Nicole.
Samantha Nicole, yes, absolutely. You know, and she, like both of her races this year, you know, she ran a solid race on her comeback, a very generous filly, big mover. Won the stake last time out at Lone Star, gave her plenty of time, and with her being a stakes winner with the pedigree you just mentioned, would love to add a purse like the allowance race at Kentucky Downs for her on Thursday.
What about the Louisiana bred today, a Colonial, Cravens?
Big chance. Moved up on the turf. He is... one more run at Colonial Downs, and then he will be one of the first ones through the gate to get to be at the fairgrounds for this winter.
Excellent. And what about Rivoli coming up?
Rivoli's got a little shot at Indiana. I think where that's tomorrow. Commissioner Dana today at Indiana has a nice little chance. Backbeat at Colonial's got a nice chance, but I think our best Fairchild would be the most confidence to get the winner circle for me that what we have in at the entries right now.
There it is, folks. The big A, Lock of the week.
Banterra Friday at Saratoga in the New York bred race. She ran a solid second first time out from scratching in from the 12-hole, kind of a wide trip for her. Got beat by the nice Mendelsohn filly of Windstar's first time out. But with a race over the track at Saratoga with a 2-year-old, sure seems to be moving them up.
I see Wicked Halo's entered in the Prioress, too.
Yeah, don't you love it when you're another gun runner out of Tappet that's a graded stakes winner gets to slide in that easily? So, but anxious to get her back.
Unbelievable. Everywhere I look, Louisiana Downs 2, you got the Texas bread, Let's Go Romeo, later in the week. Steve, this was wonderful, and just so delighted for Ron and David and you, yeah. Scott, and everybody. So much has gone into it, and to see him fulfill his promise.
Unbelievable credit to the barn, the staff, and their energy level and their attitude and just how positive they are, you know. It's what a wonderful environment to be involved in.
Now, it starts with you and goes from there. Steve Asmussen, everybody, and Epicenter, not just the leader of the division, but really turning us toward the fall in in high spirits. Steve, thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, guys. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Steve Asmussen, everybody. Top of the hour is upon us, and I hope you had the pens and pencils rolling for that variety of potential winners. But starting with Fairchild on Thursday at Kentucky Downs. If you haven't looked yet, the Kentucky Downs card, really unbelievable. 12 horse fields, I think all but two races, and you got the Tappet, actually, is the first stake, as it happens, and more. We'll talk to Hammer probably Wednesday, right? Yeah, Wednesday, the day before, and then we'll head to Kentucky Downs. Starting, we'll be there a week from Wednesday. And we'll be there Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, leading into that weekend. Then Monday and Tuesday, we're anticipating making some of the final arrangements, making arrangements to be at Keeneland for the first 2 days. Then back to Kentucky Downs. And then Churchill, leading up to opening day there and opening weekend. So I'm going to shift the tack along with everybody else as Saratoga empties out. Let's take a break here. It's 10 o'clock straight up. Fun first hour. And thanks, Steve Asmussen, for the extended visit. Let's step away. We'll come back and have Rich Migliori join us. We'll get his thoughts on the weekend and a couple of the things that came up already, right? And while now that the exit, the opening music exit has started, I guess I'll have to tap dance along for a few minutes. Should mention the always important maiden race on this Travers card that is frequently a major producer. On the maiden ranks, and a horse that needed, no introduction, didn't necessarily have the same buzz that, per se, that Echo Again did, but verifying out of Brad Cox's barn, who happens to be a May foal. May 11th, too, not like May 1st or 2nd. May 11th, this two-year-old, out of the wonderful Diva Delight, verifying, half-brother of Midnight Bisou, of course, right? So, there was plenty to anticipate, and verifying looked really good here, doing it at 75 cents on the dollar. This should be, won by a length and three quarters. Track mate, actually. Wayne Lucas has had a terrific meet. Sent out a second timer here, and this was a turn back. This was very clever, actually. Wayne debuting track mate. This was, you want to talk old school? Debuted track mate going a mile and a 16th on the grass. This is the Union Rags out of the very nice teammate, the AP Indy mare for Calumet. And then promptly did it with the Bug Boy, and Trackmate ran kind of evenly. I mean, he was beaten five lengths going long on the grass, and then turns back to 6 furlongs on the dirt. That's kicking it old school. and ran well. And was very happy to see Didinger, the namesake, speaking of Clark Brewster, the Clark bred this Bolt Doro out of Gwythian, the Street Sense mare, and was a $230,000 purchase for Chuck Zackney and the Cash's King team, plus LC Racing, his partner, Butchie Reed, sending Didinger. And for those of you that aren't East Coast 215 savvy, in the Illadelph, the greatest sports writer in Philadelphia sports history, and that's a big field, and the greatest Eagles chronicler in history, Ray Didinger. Ray Diddy, who just retired. Officially, he's still doing some scribbling. We're going to scribble into hour two right now at the races. Sirius XM, Rich Migliore next.
At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians...